American dream. To his last breath, he'll always be a soldier.
Heard on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
The National Defense is made possible by Ford. Go further. By The Home Depot. More saving, more doing. By ADT Security. More than just a line in the sand. By VSP. For more information on how VSP can help you with your corrective vision needs, visit their website at VSP.com. By Morgan Stanley. Discover how they can help you reach your long-term financial goals at MorganStanley.com. And by Farmers Insurance. At Farmers, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two. Find an agent at Farmers.com.
This is the National Defense, Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. And Jerry, as always, our dedication.
Hey, this show's for you, the men and women serving in our military. It's for the millions of veterans out there, and it's for all their families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you.
What a show.
Oh, man.
Are you kidding me?
I got my heels locked. 45-degree angle.
General Colin Powell is on the program. General, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Great. Good. Hey, listen, it's such an honor to talk to you. Thank you so much for the time. And, you know, it's hard to find anybody, Jerry, that when you mention General Colin Powell in his role as Secretary of State or anything that he's ever done in leadership roles, it's hard to find anybody that has a problem with Colin Powell.
No, he exemplifies the word leadership.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he really
does. Honor and integrity.
And General, you know, in this day and age with everything that's going on, that's a tough thing to say about anybody.
Well, you know, guys, I appreciate that very, very much. But if you really want to see some people or meet some people who would say negative things about me, I can provide as many as you need.
Oh, me too. I can do that.
Oh, no.
For me, I mean.
Yeah, right. You'd need a long list for me. But so this is a great honor, like I said. And I think that as far as leadership goes, you've not only demonstrated that throughout your career, but that has been one of your focal points, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. You know, when I left the State Department and was thinking about writing another book, people wanted me to write a memoir about my time at the State Department. But I said, you know, something that might be more useful is to write a book about what I learned in my many years of service with respect to leadership. And the title of the book was, It Worked For Me. Hey, it may not work for you, but this worked for me. And it's 44 short stories, none longer than about 6 pages, and everyone stands on its own, so you can dial in anywhere. And we've been enormously pleased with the way it's turned out. It's been selling at military bases, especially. Peggy and I could go to any military base in the country and sell 800 to 1,000 books in a couple hours.
Wow.
And it did well generally throughout the public. A lot of my speaking audiences will order copies of the book. But the most fun I'm having with it is I live in McLean, Virginia, which is a small little suburban town with strip malls like you used to have in the old days. And there's a wonderful hardware store there, family-owned hardware store known as McLean Hardware. And so one day I said, hey, I see you guys sometimes sell books on your counter here. You want some of mine? And they said, yeah, okay, if you want, General. So I gave them about 5. And that's been about 10 months ago. We've now sold about 300 over the counter.
Cool. At the hardware store.
Yeah.
At the hardware store. Yeah. I mean, it's really an old-fashioned hardware store with 2 counters leaving the store and teenage girls, members of the family, are the ones that are the cashiers. But the beauty of it is, and where I become a great, great benefactor, is that I didn't want to make any money on this. It's a small store. So I said, look, I'll give them to you for what it cost me, and you sell it at list price, and you'll make a great profit on it. Well, I didn't know they were going to sell 300. I thought they were going to sell 10.
Yeah. Hey, about that agreement.
Oops.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'm not as great a businessman as I am a soldier.
Oh, I think you're doing pretty good.
I think so.
How many speeches are you giving a year now?
Well, on the corporate speaking circuit, it really is a function of the time of the year. I feel like I'm a crop picker. You have to go where the conferences are and when they are. But I'll do several dozen of those. It's a lot less than I used to do in the old days when I was a younger man. But I still enjoy it enormously because it gets me up and moving. It forces me to think and use my brain at age 81. and to
happy birthday, by the way.
Thanks very much. And it gives me a chance to meet people outside of the Washington, New York, Los Angeles access. And I see all kinds of audiences. Sometimes it's a very sophisticated corporate audience. Sometimes it's just young people. And it keeps me alive to be with young people and, frankly, to see what's going on in the country between the oceans and to realize that, you know, we have our difficulties and there's some disgruntled feelings in the country right now. But when you go out in the country, you find people that still believe in this place to the depth of their heart and soul. And they just want to see us do the right thing and get better. And we got to focus on that. The politics in America have become too partisan and too destructive of each other. We got to change that. We got to fix that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've lived the American dream. You're a son of immigrant parents, grew up in the South Bronx, and you've achieved so much in your life. But I think today there's a lot of people that just feel that American dream is out of reach for them.
Right,
right. Except it's not. The reason I was able to achieve the American dream is I started off right. I was born in Harlem to two immigrant people who came to this country, and I was raised in the South Bronx. But I had a family, a tight family, not only my parents, but an extended family of cousins, aunts, and uncles. And the feeling in the family was we didn't come to this country in order not to succeed, and the only way we can really succeed is earn a living and then raise children who will do better than us. And that's what they did. It never occurred to me or to my sister that we would go home one day and say, you know, I'm tired of this, I'm going to drop out. They would have dropped us out.
Yeah, right, right.
No, they made it very, very clear. You're not going to shame this family, and we have expectations for you. And so I struggled through school. It was only when I hit ROTC in college that I got turned on by something, and that was the military. And as I've said to many, many people who ask me, you know, when you were a kid growing up in the South Bronx, did you dream you could become chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? And I just laugh and smile and say, yeah, there I was. I was standing on a street corner, you know, Kelly Street and 163rd at about 10 years old, and I said, you're going to grow up, become chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It was unattainable and it was unthinkable back in the 1940s, but guess what? It happened.
Yeah.
And it happened because of my family, it happened because of the public school system I had in New York City, and it happened because this is America, and America was changing, and I came along as that change was taking place, especially with respect to racial relations and getting rid of Jim Crow and segregation and things like that. It doesn't mean that we've achieved the dream that Martin Luther King had for us. That's coming. But just keep pushing, keep pressing. And the country is changing. I can see it as I travel around. I can see it as I watch television. You see mixed couples in advertising on television now that you would never have seen 20 years ago. And the reason for that is the advertisers realize that that's the way the country's going to increasingly look. And they got a market to that group. And so I have total faith in the resiliency of this country to do the right thing, even if it takes us a while, because that's what our founding fathers intended. Remember what they told us, to make this a more perfect union. They never said perfect. They said more perfect, meaning every day we have to try to do something right in the country to make it more perfect. That's the dream they had.
I wish we could, hand what you just said, distribute that everywhere, because you know, your optimism is certainly refreshing, especially when race, you know, let's face it, it's still a big issue. You more than probably most have confronted race in a lot of different ways. It wasn't easy for you to achieve what you did. And,
that's right. I mean, I've been exposed to discrimination as a junior officer and, frankly, as a senior officer sometimes. And what I have said to others, you know, I'm just going to do my job to the best of my ability. If you have a racial problem with me, that's your problem. I will not let it be my problem. I will not carry your racist burden around. And that's taken me through a few unpleasant experiences over the years. But what I tell young people of all races, and I'm not just a black general, I'm a general for all of our races, all of our people who serve in the armed forces of the United States. What I say is, you know, do your very, very best. Don't always try to be the best, just always do your best. And America is waiting to help you achieve your best. And that's what I've always tried to do. Never expected to reach the levels that I reached in this government and in the United States, but I did. And I wasn't out to walk over anybody doing it. I just did my best. If that was good enough, that's all I could do. And so the big problem we have now, and I'm very involved in education. I have something like 10 schools named after me across the country.
Wow.
You'll never guess what state has the most Colin Powell schools. Texas.
Really?
Yep. I got 4 schools, one outside of Houston, 2 outside of Dallas, and one at Fort Bliss down in El Paso. And I'm very proud. I've been to all 10. I've been to the one in Jersey City. I've been to the one in Centerville, Virginia. I've been to a lot of them. But the biggest one is my college, the City College of New York. They started a small center named after me 20-something years ago, and I couldn't have anything to do with it. I was in government. When I got out of government in 2005, when I left the State Department, I went up there to see what was going on in my name. And I realized that the kids that go to that school are mostly minority, 90% minority, and 80% say they were born somewhere else.
Wow.
And when I heard all of that, I said, I got to get involved here. And so I started to spend a lot of time up there, and I chaired the Board of Visitors. And 6 years ago, the college saw fit to make an entire school in the college named after me, the Colin Powell School for Global and Civic Leadership.
Wow.
It's got almost a third of the student body. And I cannot tell you what joy it gives me to go up there and be with these kids. We also brought ROTC back to the campus after it had been away for 20 or 30 years. So what do you think we leave behind when we're gone? The only thing we leave behind are, good works, people liked you, but it's kids.
Sure.
It's the next generation. And I'll often say, I got a lot of little medals that I wear and a lot of trinkets that have been given me over the years, but nothing matches walking up to one of these schools that has across the top of it the Colin Powell School. That'll be there long after I'm gone.
I can't even imagine. We're talking to General Colin Powell here in the National Defense. General, we're going to take a quick break here. Coming up, we'll have the rest of our interview with General Colin Powell right here on the National Defense. Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller. It's time for the Morgan Stanley Money Brief. And again with us this week, Kurt Neddenrip. He's a Morgan Stanley Wealth Advisor. And last week, you were talking about some action steps. We got through a couple of them, but if you can kind of bring us up to speed on the different kind of action steps that veterans need to, especially younger veterans that are transitioning out.
Yeah, absolutely. So last week, we talked about building an emergency fund and the reasons for that, starting the first investment account and getting into a habit of lifelong investing. And the third one now is that many veterans will want to explore buying their first home to begin building equity. Now, that's going to depend on the duty station, personal considerations, local real estate market health, all of those kinds of things. But it can make sense for veterans to begin building equity through home ownership, but it's not a slam dunk. What we recommend is consult experienced professionals in your area, help you decide if that's the right thing for you. And when we do that, we maximize the resources available by considering VA loans, benefits such, military benefits, as well as private military and veterans assistance programs that are available in your area. There's a lot of them.
Well, and Kurt, you bring up a good point because those are changing all the time, too. And they're constantly being, adding kind of some of these other resources that are just starting and forming. So it's best if you can get all of that information so you can make a really informed decision, right?
Absolutely. And, the thing about asking others for advice and referrals to good professionals is that why make a mistake that somebody else has already learned from, and so use that experience and use that advice. So the fourth one is that many veterans will have children in formed households at this stage in this military career. So the reason I suggest considering this as a financial planning item is that while children can be a great blessing, they're also one of the largest expenses that a parent can undertake. For example, a young couple that believes they're ready to have their first child but is also planning their exit from the military service may want to have their children while still covered by military health care. Those are the kinds of things that you might not think of as a financial planning item, but really it is. It's just so important that we have that health insurance coverage when you're having a child, and it will have a bigger financial impact than on how well a particular stock in your Roth IRA performed this year, for example. We've actually got 5 action items, and the fifth one is so important, and that is invest in yourself.
I like it.
Yeah, while you're in the military, there are so many different opportunities. You can work to get your degree. You can work to increase your income through additional education. And one of the things that people often overlook is that they don't take advantage of every opportunity available by their branch. And that doesn't have to be an associate's or bachelor's degree. For example, you know, if someone works in the supply chain or S4 shop, they might have the opportunity to take training that gives them the certification related to their specialty in supply and logistics. That can be extremely valuable once you're out of the service to a civilian employer, and it can set you apart from other applicants. So any of that on-the-job training or certification that you can get will really help you build your resume.
We're talking to Curt Nedenrip, Morgan Stanley Wealth Advisor here on the Morgan Stanley Money Brief. And the other thing that's coming really into the fore right now is getting trade jobs. And there's a lot of companies that are out there training veterans in trade jobs and things they've never done before.
Absolutely. So any certifications that you can get during your military career that can apply to those after military jobs, absolutely valuable.
Yeah, I like what you guys call it, intellectual capital.
That's right. And so two forms of capital we like to focus on. So, for example, if you're, you know, digging a ditch, you can dig more ditch with a shovel per day than a stick. Yeah. You can dig more with a backhoe than you can with a shovel. That's where we add physical capital, and that increases our productivity. But when we add a degree, you know, to our intellectual capital or a certificate like an industry certificate, that adds intellectual capital that can also make us more productive and allow us to earn more for our family in the future.
It just makes sense, Curt. How can people find out, especially with veterans, how can they find out more about what they need to do with Morgan Stanley?
So for more information, veterans can go to morganstanley.com/veterans for some great stories about the veterans that work at Morgan Stanley and for more information on all of the topics that we've just discussed.
Next week, we'll talk about action items to consider in the second key life stage. And we'll be back next week with a brand new Morgan Stanley Money Brief right here on the National Defense.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only. The information, views, and opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of Morgan Stanley Wealth Management or its affiliates, but are those of the presenters and their guests. The information presented is current as of the original date of this broadcast. Neither the information provided nor any opinion expressed herein constitutes a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. This radio program does not provide individually tailored advice. It has been prepared without regard to the individual financial circumstances and objectives of persons who receive it. The strategies discussed may not be suitable for all individuals. Morgan Stanley recommends that individuals independently evaluate particular strategies and encourages them to seek the advice of a financial advisor. The appropriateness of a particular strategy will depend on an individual circumstances and objectives. Diversification does not assure a profit or protect loss in declining financial markets. Tax laws are complex and subject to change. Morgan Stanley, its affiliates, and Morgan Stanley and financial advisors do not provide tax or legal advice and are not fiduciaries under ERISA, the Internal Revenue Code, or otherwise, with respect to the services or activities described herein, except as otherwise provided in writing by Morgan Stanley and or as described at www.morganstanley.com/disclosures/DOL. Individuals are encouraged to consult their tax and legal advisors, A, before establishing a retirement plan or account, and B, regarding any potential tax, ERISA, and related consequences of any investment made under such plan or account. Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, member SIPC.
Welcome back to the National Defense. Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry, and we're going to get back to this. Is fantastic, Jerry. I mean, who gets this much time with General Colin Powell?
Not many people, that's for sure.
Right here on the National Defense. That has to be precedent setting for someone that has not been the president of the United States to have 10 schools named after them. I mean, that's incredible. But the real question is, how come you never have been president?
I was busy naming schools. they're named after me because they're brand new and they had to name them after somebody.
Yeah, right. Well, I know that's not an original question. You probably ask that every two or three days.
I wish it was every two or three days. It's every day.
It's every day.
And
yeah.
It's been 22 years since I said, you know, this is not for me or my family. But I'm very flattered whenever somebody says it. I'm not offended. But I just have to say, you know, you have to have something inside of you that pushes you in that direction. And I did not. And so I didn't fool myself. I didn't deceive myself or the American people by thinking that I really had that passion. And I've served almost 40 years either in diplomacy or military. And my family and I continue to serve, not only with the schools that we go to and sponsor, but the America's Promise Alliance, which we created some 22 years ago. that my wife now runs, that we focus on the needs of our kids, especially those kids who don't have the kind of family that I had or maybe you guys have had. And where that doesn't exist, then we have to bring in boys and girls clubs. We got to bring in mentoring programs. We got to make sure these kids have a healthy start in life and they're getting a good quality education. It can be done, but no one sweeping program is going to do it all. Each of us has to get in the lives of kids in need and never forget that we have benefited from this country and we have an obligation not just to enjoy those benefits, but to reach down, back, and across and lift somebody else up.
Absolutely. General, you know, I served in Vietnam myself, and we always look to certain people to follow, and some we would follow, and quite frankly, some we didn't want to follow. You were the type of commanding officer that soldiers would follow, and I hate to use a cliche, but into hell. And there's reasons for that, and that's because way back then, you had the right stuff, the right leadership qualities. In Washington today, and I'm not trying to get political here, but in Washington today, there seems to be a leadership vacuum. Can you define leadership so our listeners can understand what you think it is, and it's coming from a hell of a good source?
As I said in my writings and my speeches over the years, leadership is all about followership. You're not a leader if you don't have followers who will willingly follow you. And so I have always gone into every assignment I've ever had thinking first and foremost about the people that have been entrusted to my care. And how do I give them a sense of purpose, that what they are doing is important, is vital. I did it at the State Department, I did it when I worked in the White House, and I did it throughout my military career. What you're doing is vital. It's important. People need to think they're doing something that is vital, and that is what will inspire them. And then the next thing I always try to apply is once I have them moving and inspired and we're all on the same sheet of music, how do I make sure that I give them the tools they need to get the job done? In the military, those tools are weapons and equipment. In the State Department, they are diplomats and foreign service officers who are coming in. And in the White House, it was making sure you had the best staff you could have. And then taking care of them. People like to be taken care of. They like to be recognized for performance done well. They expect you to take care of those folks who are not performing. Move them on. Get them out. And the ones who know who's not performing long before you do are the ones who are performing. They can see people who are not getting it done and hanging back, and they're waiting for a leader to do something. And a leader who doesn't do something is not a leader. And so at the end of the day, you have to make sure that not only are you a good leader, but you too are a good follower. And people will look up to you if you're taking care of them and if they believe in what you are asking them to do. It's pretty much as simple as that. And the American soldier and the American civilians that I work with are like that. What is it we need to be doing? How does it serve the country? Are you taking care of us? Are you getting us what we need to get the job done? And if you do all of that, and if you recognize their performance, and if you discipline the organization, they will follow you to lots of places of danger. One of the last stories I usually tell has to do with when I was a brand new lieutenant then at Fort Benning, Georgia, going to the infantry school. And I was going also to ranger training and airborne training. And a sergeant came up to me toward the end of the course and said, "Lieutenant Powell, you'll know you're a good soldier if your troops will follow you, if only out of curiosity," meaning that, there will be danger. One day you'll have to send people up a hill and some of them are going to be killed. And they'll do that if they believe in you and if they trust you and if you trust them. And so building trust and confidence among a group of human beings is what leadership is all about. And that's what I've always tried to do, whether it's in working with students or working with soldiers. Working with soldiers who are poor and white from out in the sticks somewhere, or black soldiers from the inner city. More and more, as I grow older, I treat them all as my fellow brothers and sisters, my fellow Americans.
General, in your leadership experience, how much does common sense play in that?
A great great deal. I mean, yeah. I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah.
We live on common sense.
Right.
I never forget that. Whenever I go back to New York and I'm walking around, I'm not General Powell or Secretary Powell. When I'm walking down, say, 47th Street past some construction workers, what I usually hear is, "Yo, Colin, how you doing?"
Right.
Some guy from Staten Island. But those are my people.
Yeah, exactly.
I never forget where I came from. And common sense, I've always tried to be very commonsensical. Does it make sense? And that's why I'm probably not a very good politician, let me put it that
well,
way.
Well, yeah, I can see, yeah. Successful. Right.
I've got two things. I want to kind of hog the time a little bit here. I've got two things. One, I'd like to know what has been the biggest game changer for you in your life. And secondly, if you could please recite the lines you delivered when you spoke so eloquently, and I believe it was to the United Nations, when you talked about the only thing we look for when we go into a place militarily, we're only asking for one thing for our service members, for our dead service members.
Oh, this story is very well known. And on the first question, it's a question I never answer. People are asking me what was the most important thing in my life, what was the worst thing, and I try not to answer those questions because when you say this was the most important changing event in my life, you're putting something else in second, third, and fourth place.
Mm, gotcha.
But I tend not to answer those questions. The other question is something that happened at a conference in Davos, that famous conference they have every year.
Okay.
And this was in early 2003, when we were getting ready to start the war, the second Iraq war. And a clergyman, he was the retired Archbishop of England, Episcopal Archbishop, and he stood up to me and he said, "Well, why do we always have to find a war solution? Why can't we, you know, use diplomacy and soft power instead of hard power?" And my response was, "I believe in soft power. I'm well known for being the reluctant general who wants to try to solve a problem through diplomacy, not through war. But when war comes, then hard power is what counts. You want to do what you have to do and get it over with as soon as possible, put as many troops on it as you possibly can." And then I reminded him, and I said, "You know, my Lord Archbishop, let me remind you that if it had not been for hard power in World War II, who knows where the Germans might be today, the Nazis might be today. So sometimes hard power is the only thing that will work. And I remind you, sir, that that's what we did to save England in World War II and make Europe a democratic place and Japan a democratic place. And we didn't stay. We didn't ask for land. We didn't want sovereignty over anybody. The only thing we asked for was enough land to bury our dead." That quieted the room down.
That quiets me down every time I read it or hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So true.
We're talking to General Colin Powell here on the National Defense. And, General, I want to ask you about America's Promise. When you were the chairman of America's Promise, is what you're doing now, your work with students, is that pretty much an extension of America's Promise?
It's an extension, and it undergirds America's Promise. But even if there was no America's Promise, I'd be doing this because I love kids. I've got three of my own plus four grandchildren. And I love going to schools. I was on the board of the Boys and Girls Clubs of America for a number of years, and nothing gave me greater joy than to go to a Boys and Girls Club, get the adults out of the way, and put the kids on the floor in front of me and just talk to them for about 30 minutes. The younger the kids were, the more fun it was for me. And so I do everything I can. I've adopted a school here in Northwest Washington, a group of students. I've been working with the school now for 21 years. You know, can't just tell other people to do things. I have to do things, too. And so we have been mentoring these youngsters, kids who might go down the right path without our help, and there are kids who might not go down any good path without our help. And so we try to find those who are in the middle, could go either way. And those are the ones we work on. And my wife runs the organization now, and I'm very proud of what she has done. And this week we'll be celebrating our 21st anniversary of the America's Promise Alliance.
Wow. And I know that your son used to be the chairman of the FCC, and I do have a request for him. You know, we're on a lot of radio stations around the country. If I send you a list, could he boost the signal of each one of those stations?
What are you kidding?
I thought it was worth a shot.
Know, as you said, he used to be the chairman.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But he's got an even better job now. He's the president of the National Cable and Telecom Association.
Oh, wow.
Well, there we go. Yeah, we've been wanting to go on TV.
That's right. We've been talking about a TV show. We are going to be broadcasting the show from Fort Benning here in a few weeks.
Great.
Yep.
So I lived at Benning for 6 years. Love the place.
Oh, that's great. Well, General, listen, it's been such an honor. I can't tell you.
You've been so generous with your time.
Yes, and I can't.
Yes.
I just can't tell you what this means to especially this listening audience.
I don't know that I even want to do another broadcast because
this
where do we go from here?
We go out on top.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if I could get you just before you you exit here, if you could give us like a little liner where you say, this is General Colin Powell, and you are listening to the National Defense.
This is General Colin Powell, and you are listening to the National Defense.
What a pro.
Perfect.
What a pro.
Perfect.
I've been around this town a while, guys.
General, thank you so much for your service.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the time.
We'll be Bye now.
Hey, welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller. It's time for another episode of Eye Insights from VSP Vision Care. And Dr. Robert Meisel is with us, captain in the Navy, veteran for how many years, Dr. Meisel?
31 before I retired.
31. Thank you so much for your service. And thanks for being on with us today. I know that you were also San Diego County Optometric Society board member. And a retired VSP network doctor, right?
Correct.
Which means you know what you're talking about when it comes to eye care, and especially with the spring coming in. If spring ever gets here, we'll have to deal with some spring sports. And this is one thing that I think people are, I don't want to say they are kind of lazy about, but they really don't know what they need to do. You know, you always think about sports in terms of concussions and different things, but how important are eye injuries? How prevalent is that in sports?
Well, it depends on the sport, obviously. Some of the most common sports for injuries would be things like racquetball, tennis, where people don't have eye protection a lot of times, but should. Basketball is also a very common sport to have eye injuries with people swiping at a ball and instead hitting the ball, they hit somebody's eye.
Sure.
But in the springtime, you know, in some parts of the country, as you said, they're still doing skiing.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, baseball. I mean, baseball eye injuries. In fact, there was just a Kansas City Royals player that got hit, a pitcher that got hit in the eye with a baseball. It's just terrible.
Exactly. And we don't think about that. And of course, we always think it's not going to happen to us. But
right.
Eye protection is very important, especially at lower levels of sports, with Little League. It's just something to think about. You know, we think about sunglasses a lot of times.
Right.
Sports, especially in baseball, is a pop-up and you have, don't have sunglasses on. You can get absolutely not able to see the ball. But as far as things like riding a bike, springtime, a lot of times you want to do that. So sunglasses are important to not only protect from the sun, but also particulates from pollens, things falling from trees, like cottonwood trees, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, I want to ask you about that, some remedies if you get irritants in your eyes.
Well, I mean, the first thing is to shield them with the sunglasses because it not only acts, like I said, from the barrier from the sunlight, but also from just things blowing, and especially if you're riding a bicycle, insects, et cetera, flying around. But if something does happen to get into your eye, of course, the best thing that you can do is have somebody try to remove it with some fluids.
Sure.
If there's a little bit of dirt or something in there, a clean source of water, saline to just flush it out. Our eyes naturally tend to flush out with our tears. But if it becomes embedded in there or something is irritating after several minutes, it's probably best to seek professional care and have somebody look at it.
Yeah, that's really why I have no problem playing sports, because there's a lot of tears when I play sports. And so I tend to be okay.
Maybe from your opponent.
No, not really. You talked about the added benefits to wearing sunglasses. What are some other steps that people can take to avoid sports eye injuries?
Well, as I said, protection, especially in areas where there's rapid moving balls, such as racquetball, tennis, things like this, squash. But just being aware of your surroundings. The federal and the baseball leagues now, they have just put up some screens.
Yes.
Protect players from the fans. No.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, right.
It's protecting the fans from foul balls, especially since there were some incidences of some serious injuries.
Hey, you guys at VSP have some things that we can really look forward to, especially for veterans, right? Can you talk about that exciting news?
Yes. There's a website called tricare.benefeds.com, but it's basically a federal program for vision, and certain retired members of the uniformed services and their families will be offered some coverage beginning January of 2019. So tricare.benefeds.com has more information.
That is so good. And Dr. Meisel is going to be back with us next week with a brand new segment. Right here, Eye Insights from VSP Vision Care.
When you're dealing with life's ups and downs, it helps to know the ins and outs of insurance. Farmers Insurance has been sharing practical insurance knowledge for more than 89 years. At Farmers, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two. Find an agent at farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Home is not just something you can see or touch. Home is a feeling. It's the place where you feel safe to have those little moments that mean everything. At ADT, we believe that feeling should always be there. Whether it's at your house or your business, we help keep you safe so you can have those moments that make you feel at home.
You are loved.
Wherever you are.